With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
It's Wednesday, December 8th, and you're tuned into the Cleveland Baseball Talk Podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynes. Lindsay, I'm sitting here as we're recording this. I'm watching Sandy Koufax shut out the Twins in Game 7 of the 1965 World Series on MLB Network. That means the lockout is still in effect and nothing else is going on. You know, hey, Sandy Koufax is great, and I love watching him pitch. It must have been murder trying to face this guy as a lefty. He was dominant in this game. But I sure would like to be talking about, you know, current players and teams and moves and strategy. It doesn't look like that's going to be happening anytime soon.
Yeah, that's for sure. I think that World Series was the one when I think Mudcat Grant won maybe two games in that series for the Twins. I know.
I think so. And this was Game 7 when, you know, the Twins are at home and they couldn't get a run.
Yeah,
against Koufax. So, and Tony Oliva finished second in the MVP voting that year. That's crazy. It's, you know, and just watching this in black and white on MLB Network is sort of, you know, you get a feeling for it. It was a totally different game back then, but in a lot of ways, it was very similar. So, I would definitely want to be watching and talking about current players a lot more, but we have what we have. At this point, what are the players sort of fighting for in negotiations when they do get back to the table? What do you think one thing that they want to see definitely changed in the CBA moving forward that it can happen at least?
Yeah, they want to reach free agent faster, Joe. Free agency faster. They want reduced. They want more players eligible for arbitration, so you know their younger players can get paid more earlier in their careers. And they want guys, instead of waiting 6 years for free agency, they want to cut it to 5. And if you're the owners, I just can't see them giving in on that, or trying to. You know, I guess there's ways you could work around that. You know, they've talked about, an age-based system to turn free agent. You know, you reach 1.5 years, then you can become a free agent. But that really penalizes players like Lindor or younger players that come up to the big leagues young. And, you know, if they get their 6 years in, they're still with the same team. You know, because they're maybe 27, 28, or 29, they're not at that age group yet. So it's a complicated issue. And I just have a feeling, Joe, that this is going to last a while.
Would that force, if something like that happened, would it force teams to maybe lock up their young, talented players like we see a Juan Soto or a Ronald Acuna signing big contracts at earlier ages like that? Would that trend likely continue if that year of, that they go to the fifth year for free agency instead of six?
You know, that's a great question. You know, you see guys like Wander Franco sign that huge deal with Tampa Bay, 10, 11, 12 years.
12 years, something like, $200-some million. Yeah.
Yeah. He's 21 years old. He's 20 years old. I would think if they get the free agency and the arbitration restrictions reduced, I would think players would be not inclined to sign multi-year deals because they can turn free agent faster and they can collect their money that way. But teams, you know, might look at it differently and try to sign these guys up, you know, at a younger age.
Yeah, they would definitely try to lock some of these younger, higher talent players. You know, the middle of the road guys or the league average player isn't going to see a 10-year contract ever. It never was. But, you know, the guys who are the early poster children for the league that, you know, their faces are on the website all the time. Those are the guys who are going to get offered and locked up by teams when, you know, early on. Wander Franco didn't even play a full season and he's got a 12-year contract. It's crazy. So, at this point, I think you're right. The service time issue is the biggest issue that faces this CBA. And there are several. I think issues like, is there going to be a universal DH? Is there going to be expanded playoffs, things like that? Those are all still, you know, further on down the negotiation, you know, list, but those all have to be resolved as well.
Yeah, and definitely. I think, you know, it sounds like the universal DH is going to get, you know, whenever this comes, you know, comes out in the wash, that it will be, you know, the universal DH will be accepted. But, you know, the expanded playoffs will be 14 or 12 teams. I think the two sides are going back and forth over that. The thing that kind of jumped out at me and listening to Rob Manfred's post, you know, press conferences after the lockout was declared, was that they haven't even talked about, you know, on the field issues, a pitch clock, you know, automated umpires, the shift, you know, banning the shift. They tabled that, and because it was such a, you know, caused so much friction between the sides. And Manfred said, you know, we table it with the idea we won't even approach it till midterm and then coming on the next basic agreement. So, I mean, they've been talking about this for years, and now they're going to table it, 3 years down the road if they get another 5 or 6 year deal? So that kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah, I didn't even realize that was the case with the on-field stuff. You know, those were things that were coming up, you know, back when Cleveland was in the World Series. So this is 5 years ago that they were talking about all these pace of play initiatives and things like that. So interesting that those have been tabled and are sort of, you know, not going to be part of this basic agreement conversation. Like you said, there are bigger fish to fry. The Players Association sets their sights on a few issues, and that's where you want to make the major changes. So, yeah. And as of right now, we're still not even at the table discussing. So yeah, It'll probably be after the holidays when we get to that.
There's one thing, Joe, that kind of jumped out at me. You know, the owners have, have suggested or put out there, you know, a draft where it would be a lottery draft like the NBA. So, you know, that would appease the players in terms of, you know, their concerns about tanking. So, you know, that seems like that makes sense to me. That would be an interesting concept right there.
Yeah, a draft lottery would be interesting. You could make a whole event out of it during the playoffs or whenever you wanted to do that. So we know how Major League Baseball likes to turn these things into like jewel events for themselves. So yeah, that's interesting. Let's see if that happens as well. On the nuts and bolts side of things, we found out there are 6 candidates now for the Mets job. So whoever will be tending to the dumpster fire at this point, Brad Osmus, Joe Espada, Bob Guerin, Don Kelly, Matt Cataro, and Buck Showalter. I believe Showalter's getting his interview via Zoom today. We'll see. Word is that it's Showalter's job to lose, but it'd be his fifth job, his fifth managerial job in Major League Baseball. At this point, do you think his heart is in it?
Yeah, I think his heart is in it, Joe, but he is a guy that, you know, you either love this guy or you hate him. You know, it's his way or the highway. He comes in and, you know, he really, you know, he's great to talk to. He's and he knows baseball inside and out, but he can wear on you. I think he wears on the front office, and but I think for a team like the Mets in their state, you know, after what they went through last year, that might be the best bet. And you know, it's a short shelf life, you know, 3-4 years, and you're probably, you know, on to the next guy. But you know, I think, you know, Showalter is probably a good choice there. He could handle the media. And, you know, I was listening to the radio today, and Scherzer, I guess, you know, there was a report that Scherzer, you know, kind of recommended him. So, and Scherzer just signed a 3-year, $130 million deal for the Mets. So maybe they'll listen to Max.
Yeah, that would make Showalter the inside favorite right now, I guess, as it stands. And we found out word Yasiel Puig has received an offer from a KBO team, the heroes of the KBO in South Korea there. Yasiel Puig hasn't played in the big league since he was with Cleveland a couple seasons ago. You think we'll see Puig play in the Korea baseball organization?
Yeah, I think if Puig wants to keep playing, he should go to Korea. I really don't think anybody's going to touch him here with the big league in the big leagues. It just, you know, you don't go 2 years without playing without a reason. I mean, and I think he's healthy. You know, every time, you know, he was posting all those videos earlier this past season of him working out on the beach where he played in Mexico, I think, for a while. Yeah. And, but you know, no one has gone near Yasiel, and, I'm not sure, you know, he comes with a lot of baggage, and you know, God love him, he was fun to talk to in Cleveland, but he rubs you the wrong way a little bit. He rubs management, and
that's what I was gonna say. He rubs managers the wrong way. Managers and teammates he rubs the wrong way. Media he's all right with. Any guy who licks his baseball bat, I still have I have questions about stability wise, but yeah, there's a reason why he and Terry Francona didn't get along, didn't see eye to eye on a lot of things.
And you know, Joe, his whatever he hit one home run with the Indians. What did he hit?
One or two? Yeah,
yeah. I think his power kind of like evaporated too. So I don't know what that was all about. But
he still liked
great arm, really liked him in the outfield.
Really liked to uncork throws from right field. He loved to show off his arm, didn't he?
He did not hit a cutoff man, I don't think. So he,
no. Not a lot. Hey, tomorrow we will come back at you with our baseball holiday gift guide, sort of a Secret Santa setup. We'll talk a little bit about baseball gifts for teams and players and you know, executives throughout baseball that we think would be the perfect fit. We'll run down our holiday gift guide for baseball on tomorrow's show. Today we're going to get into George Valera, Cleveland's number 2 overall prospect, according to MLB Pipeline, not ranked in the top 100 prospects by that site, but Valera is certainly positioning himself to have an impact at the major league level. He's sort of the guy in waiting right now, the guy that everybody in Cleveland, everybody with the Guardians is sort of waiting to see and waiting for him to arrive here in the outfield. Can George Valera at the ripe old age of 21 someday be the savior for Cleveland's outfield?
Yeah, definitely. This is a team that needs outfielders. That's had a hard time developing guys, really developing them and getting them to the big leagues and keeping them in the big leagues. We've seen, you know, Tyler Naquin and Bradley Zimmer, they had Frazier, he's gone. So, lots of outfielders, but not too many guys have stuck. And, you know, this is their next best hope right here.
Yeah. He comes with all of the sort of accolades at this point. The two things you know about George Valera when you think about him, when you talk about him with the Guardians, is he's very young. He's still very young. He's been very young for the last 3 years since we've been talking about him. He's very young and he's very patient and he hits everywhere he plays. Every level he's played at so far, and particularly this past year at High A, Lake County, and then he moved up to Double A Akron. He was at times the best hitter on the club, you know, even though he was, you know, 20, 21 years old.
Yeah, you know, he overcame an oblique injury early in the season at Lake County. And then he, you know, moved up to Akron and you know, those his total numbers were like 260. He had 260, five doubles, four triples, 19 homers, 65 RBIs in 86 games. He can run a little bit, 11 stolen bases in 16 attempts and a 910 OPS, Joe. So he did most of that damage at Lake County, but still he showed pretty well at Akron as well.
Yeah, you talk about his OPS, you talk about his on-base percentage. You know, this is a guy who has an sort of an uncanny command of the strike zone, pitches he takes, pitches he can recognize spin on a baseball. He knows how pitchers are going to attack him, and this is at a very young age. I mean, it helps that he's a native of the Bronx. He's from the Bronx. Moved back to the Dominican Republic when he was young, and that's why he was an international draft pick. But he's bilingual and very, you know, very knowledgeable as a student of the game, I believe is the feeling you get from him. His walk rate is sort of one of the best things about him at this point because he hits for power, he hits all over the place, but he also gets on base a lot.
Yeah, Joe, and he's kind of an interesting story. Like you said, he moved back to the Dominican when he was 13. You know, just from reading some of his back about him, like you said, he grew up in the Bronx. His dad was in an accident, hit by a truck or something like that, and they, you know, because of his, you know, his recovery, they wanted to move back to the Dominican where the weather was warmer, and that's where he started playing baseball. But before he left the Bronx, he was playing for one of the Yankees amateur teams, top amateur teams. And the Yankees kind of had a beeline on this kid, on Valera. You know, they were kind of grooming him, I think. And all of a sudden, you know, they moved back to the Dominican, and the Indians take him, sign him for what, $1.3 million, a signing bonus. And, you know, and he's been, you know, they've been developing him ever since.
Yeah, it just feels like and seems like for anybody who's followed Cleveland and their minor league system for the last several years, it just feels like they've been developing George Valera for so long. And it'll show you. I mean, he signed when he was, 16 years old. So, I mean, when that happens, it takes away. That's why he was a Rule 5 eligible player this year, was because he was taken so early in the international phase of the draft there. I mean, expectation right now is that, you know, he might open the season once they start playing at Double A, and then, you know, with an eye on moving up to Triple A quickly. Do you expect him to spend the entire season in the minors in 2022?
You know, I would think so, Joe. I mean, maybe, you know, I guess it would depend how the season goes with the Guardians. You know, if they struggle, you know, and you know, they've already loaded that 40-man roster with so many young players that I would think nothing is going to stop them from starting to look at some of these guys. So I would think it would depend on just how they're competing at the big league level. And depending on who they fill that outfield with right now. You know, you got Miles Straw in center field, and are you really going to open the season with Mercado and Zimmer in the corner?
Miles Straw and two big question marks on either side of him, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So who knows? Valera, you know, he's 21, like you said, he hasn't played AAA, you know, so I would think you'd want to get him a little more seasoning.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, Valera, he'll be in camp, obviously, it to start with big league camp, but I think he'll be sent down to minor league camp relatively early. I would assume that would be one of the first moves there. However, we will get a look at him in some exhibition games. They probably will try to, you know, keep him out of Tito's, you know, keep him out of Tito's sights there, because Tito tends to fall in love with guys like that. And Chris Antonetti and Mike Chernoff might have other plans. You know, they do that with pitchers particularly, but you know, they don't want Tito getting thoughts of, oh, we could use this kid right now in our lineup, when it's a little bit too early for him. I don't see them opening the season with Mercado and Zimmer on either side of Straw, but I definitely don't see them opening the season with Valera anywhere out there at all. He could probably use a full, or you know, the majority of a season at AAA. I think he's in the position that Gabriel Arias was sort of in at this time last year. You know, hadn't played any AAA, so give him the full season at that level, and then see what he can do when he comes to camp the following year.
Yeah, that's a great point, Joe. Where do you you look at his breakdown on defensively? He's spent most of his career in the minors in center field, but he's also played a lot of right field. More right field than center field. And you know, like all Indians outfielders, they play them all over the place. You know, they make sure they play all three outfield positions. He's played 44 starts in center, 25 in left, and 63 in right. So I guess he's got a pretty good arm too, from what we saw a little bit of at the alternate site. Well, not in the alternate site, but in spring training too, in 2020, you know, we saw him a couple times, you know, so I'm not sure. I guess he could play either corner. What do you think?
Yeah, I would have to see his arm sort of in person before I got a feel for it. He might just be playing right field in the lower minors by necessity. Boy, it would feel really good to be able to pencil him in left field, starting in 2023, right next to Miles Straw, if you can lock him up for a couple more years there. And that would be, you talk about an outfield with speed and athletic ability there. You just get sort of pictures like this guy could be a Michael Brantley. He swings the bat and he gets on base and, you know, walks enough, has a good enough eye. That's sort of what Cleveland has been lacking for so long. And you sort of fall in love with that idea. You know, find somebody else to play right field who, you know, has a big arm, unless Valera really is the real deal out there defensively.
Yeah. And this, definitely, I like his attitude just by reading about him a little bit. You know, he said, I guess his goal right now is to, he says he wants to be a Hall of Famer. That's his
goal. Isn't that everybody's goal?
That's what he's working toward. So, you know, he's setting the bar pretty high for himself. So let's see how this kid does.
Yeah. I'm excited to see him and to see a little more of him. I was disappointed in myself that I didn't get out to too many captains games last year when he was with Lake County and, you know, that close. I could have been out there for a couple of times to see him, but again, not knowing when he was playing with the oblique injury, there was a lot behind that. But this is, you know, circle this name for Guardians fans, definitely for the future. This is the guy to keep an eye on. And sort of if there's maybe one definitely untradeable prospect on that, you know, top 30 list from MLB Pipeline, this would be the guy who's the most untradeable at this point.
Yeah, Roglis Odor, his manager at Akron, said he's an everyday player in the big leagues. He's only 20, but he doesn't think he's 20. He play like, you know, meaning he plays at an older age than 20 years old. So it's interesting.
All right, to wrap up today's podcast, just came across hot off the presses, Hoynesy. We have breaking news. Jack Graney has been elected to the Hall of Fame. The former Cleveland play-by-play man, longtime broadcaster for the Indians, has been named the Ford C. Frick Award winner. He will go into the Hall of Fame in 2022. Long time waiting, and this was Jack Rainey's time. He's going to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that's great. And he played forever for the Indians too. Then was he an outfielder for the Indians?
He was one of the first broadcasters to make that transition from playing to being a full-time broadcaster, and he's a legend in Cleveland. So
yeah, there's that great quote on him on the wall in the lunchroom at Progressive Field. What's it say? You know, I leave all the fancy words to the other guys. I just follow the baseball.
That's classic. We'll have more on Jack Rainey tomorrow. On the podcast, but Hoynsy, we'll wrap it up today. We'll talk to you again Thursday here on the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast.
All right, Joe.